a radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Joe and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Yeah!
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Albania has himself another hit. Zubon should score easily and will. It's going to be a 7-1 game. Back-to-back at bats with a hit for Jeremy Pena, and he drives in a run.
Step aside, Gay Pride. It's June 27th. It is DJ Sprue Day, and the Astros are back at 500, and the Astros have a 7-game winning streak. Longest winning streak of the year. First time at 500 all year. And I'm going to stop sounding so happy about it. I'm
relieved.
First time at 500 this year.
Yeah, that's what I said. First time. Okay. Yeah, first time at 500 all year.
They're 0-0.
But back at 500, over 500 from where they used to be. They were 0-0 twice this year. Three times, actually, because we've had three resets.
They're 0-0 a lot.
You're right.
We had a season start. My bad. I'm doing them. Our Gallant and George math, not very good. Joe's bringing me down.
The
beginning of the season, they were 0-0. The second reset, they were 0-0. And the third reset, they were 0-0.
Yeah.
Was the second reset, when did we do that? I don't even remember.
It was one of the days I was out, I think. Verlander came back. One was Mexico, one was Verlander came back, one was Abreu off the team.
Okay, so if the first one was Mexico, well...
I mean, that one kind of, we probably should have stuck to our guns a little bit.
We could have.
It got scary after that, though.
It is funny to keep pressing the reset button, but they are 33-21 since resetting their season April 27th.
Mm, that's good.
That's Chandler Rome's words, by the way, not mine.
Stealing our bit.
The players stole the bit. Remember, it was the players who said that.
Mm-hmm.
That they were restarting the season.
Everyone's stealing our bit.
And then JV came back and he said to get their heads out of their ass. Didn't last very long.
But the
Cured
real
neck, I think.
The real reset came when they met with their strength and conditioning coach, which we talked about yesterday.
Yeah,
gave him a speech.
I actually was thinking about that segment yesterday.
Martin Maldonado with a mustache on.
Hang on.
We gave that guy a lot of credit for motivating the team. But we dump on the Astros' health all the time. Isn't this guy at fault? For a lot of the Astros' issues, isn't it his problem that J.P. France, Lance McCullers, is it his fault that Kyle Tucker's leg is so brittle that he can't play in a month? He's your strength and conditioning coach.
Listen, watch it.
I'm just asking a question that needs to be asked.
You got to watch it. Okay, he's the strength and conditioning coach. He's not the medical staff. He's not the training staff.
Is there really? I mean, he's not. He's part of the training department.
If they're stronger and well conditioned, they wouldn't be hurt
maybe,
as much.
Like,
they wouldn't
JP's
be so soft.
Shoulder would be fine. Justin Verlander's neck would not be as hurt. I'm just saying we give this guy credit, but I have my questions as well.
I don't like your questions.
Maybe he's the Martin Maldonado of strength and conditioning coaches. Great speeches, but actually, like what he does. You could do better.
I'd like to really apologize for this guy for a second for disparaging you about your job.
Hey, at least you never said his name.
Well, that's because Paul's looking it up still.
Yeah, I know. That's the problem.
Blair Hindley wishes.
I wasn't
going to
say that.
Yeah, that's.
Whatever happened to Blair? He got DFA. Did they re-pick him back up or something?
You know what, man?
I was kind of hoping he was going to be starting for the Spacers tonight.
Yeah, that sounds so sarcastic when you say it.
I was going to be so obnoxious.
The strength and conditioning coach is Hazel Wesson. Chaz McCormick told the world about Hazel's big old speech. And they're going to build a statue of him outside of the ballpark when the Astros win World Series number 3. All I'm going to say about being back at 500 for the first time since last year and on top of being back at 500... the 7-game winning streak is, it's embarrassing to be happy about it. It's embarrassing to be excited about it. And yet we all are.
Is it more excited or like a sense of relief?
Yeah, relief is probably the word. And Ryan Presley pushed back about the idea that the Astros players have a sense of relief after yesterday's game. But If you actually listen to Astros players after yesterday's game, whether it was Alex Bregman or Jose Altuve, I think they're all on the same page in that, no, this isn't relief. This is that's just a sign that we have more work that we have to do. Here's Alex Bregman talking about that.
I think probably just a bunch of guys that are preparing and executing. And I think every year a team has to find kind of what that team does well. And it's different every year, you know, and guys are doing their job.
Guys are doing their job.
They should. I'm glad that the quotes they gave us, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about questions asked. What deserves to be asked as a question? What really matters being said in a press conference? What in these settings as well over the last couple of days with this Schlossnagel stuff and Rafael Stone. But I do appreciate these answers because it's just it kind of sets you back to reality that while it's good they're back to 500, it's a relief they're back to 500. It's clear that they know that's not the bar. This team is still expectations of going to a World Series, going back to an ALCS, and for an eighth straight time. That's why for me it's a little celebration that they're back to 500 because that's the goal. I want to be talking about the Astros in late October. I want to be trying to figure out before the show if we're talking about the Texans or the Astros because the Astros are back in the playoffs again and the Texans are good. I hate talking about bad baseball teams. It was a miserable month. That's part of the reason why I'm celebrating. I love baseball. And I want to talk about good baseball.
Now, I'll be honest, like I don't love baseball.
I know you
but
don't.
I do love good baseball.
Yes, I know. So if it makes Paul happier that the Astros are good at baseball, it makes me happy.
Now we can have the lineup conversations you've been craving.
No. I don't want to have those.
Well, what? Hang on. The Killer Bees. I mean, yeah. that's why the Killer Bees are in afternoons. The masters of lineup conversations.
You know, they were having producer of that show.
They were having some kind of conversation yesterday. I think
the one with Michael Schwab.
No,
who knows everything?
I'll ignore that one. I think they were like talking about traders.
Oh,
Schlossnagel to A&M. And the last text they got, because I noticed it when I opened my computer this morning, was someone texting and saying, biggest traitor, Joe George.
Traitor, not traitor.
Traitor, Joe George, because he started bashing you when he got his own show.
That's true.
They had it starred and everything. So I'm going to try to do my best to not talk about them anymore.
You just did, though.
I'm acknowledging that.
I forced you into it.
I know, but I'm going to try to ignore it. I'm going to pull back on the Beast discussions.
Yesterday, did you love that John Singleton was batting ahead of Joey Loprofito?
No.
I didn't love that.
Didn't love that.
You want to talk about it?
Lineup talk.
The floor is yours.
It was not great.
Give me some lineup talk.
As long as Dubon's in the lineup every day, I'm happy.
Yeah, that's where I'm at.
And Loprofito, too. I want a lot of – that's where lineup talk, to me, does matter if you have good players and they're not playing. That's what the Astros did for a while. They kept their best players on the bench.
Well, it was smart last year because, I mean, look at Yainer Diaz this year versus last year. And I know Yainer Diaz is finally figuring it out, but.
It's true, but.
You know, Martin Maldonado was really good as a
caller
of ball of game plans? Of question mark?
I mean, but hey, maybe Cesar Salazar is just as good as Martin
Maldonado. He might be. They finally found another.
Maldi 2.0.
Isn't he hitting like 500?
Do you even have to ask that question?
He was at one point. I can't remember.
That's my assumption. He's going to be hitting watch 500 out. The rest of the year.
Watch out, Ted Williams.
That would be funny.
Yainer Diaz on the hot seat.
They should just never play him again so that he can break the batting record. Though I know you need to have a minimum qualified at pass to get there.
No, but it would lead to fun conversations. So if they just played him more often, what would Cesar Salazar's career
batting be? It's the biggest what if in sports.
Cesar Salazar. Biggest what if in sports. Not Michael Vick.
Not Derek Rose.
Well, Michael Vick.
I think Michael Vick's one of the top ones. If he never went to jail, what is he?
Well, that's a big F.
Good point.
Yeah, but these are the biggest what ifs.
Honestly,
what
if you watch that documentary, it does seem like he was doing some things where he was not going to be as good as he needed to be. I can kind of understand that because he was such an iconic figure that it would be very easy to get high off your own supply, if you will.
What if Michael Vick, I'm drawing a blank now about the timeline, but he could have stayed a year or left a year earlier and been the number one pick for the Houston Texans? He could have came out the expansion year?
Ooh.
What if Michael Vick would have done that? Would Michael Vick gone to jail?
I don't know.
How much better is the Texans history if he's the first pick in Texans franchise history?
It's a good question.
David Carr?
He would have gone sack less.
The one I think about is, what if Michael Vick had gone to Syracuse because they were a finalist? Donovan McNabb brought him in on a recruiting trip.
Really?
Yeah, Syracuse football was bitching in the 90s. We're the only team that almost beat Tennessee the year they won the national title. We were the only team.
Wait, only team that what?
Almost beat Tennessee. Okay. You know what? Marvin Harrison, Donovan McNabb, Dwight Freeney. Yeah, that's right.
That's a bitchin' big three.
Bitchin'. For real, for real.
Bitchin'.
They were the bee's knees, some said.
They're all that in a bag of chips.
Mm-hmm. Joe's uncomfortable with us using these white man
terms.
No,
I'm just coughing.
Oh, okay, gotcha. It's Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in, to text in. Is it okay to be happy with the Astros being back at 500 with the seven-game winning streak? And Reed Sheppard, he is a Houston Rocket. Did they make the right call? And what does drafting Reed Sheppard say about basketball as a whole? We're an American. Goes third. All of that and a bag of potato chips. Next, it's Galan and George.
You're back with Galan and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
From the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul and Joe.
With the third pick in the 2024 NBA Draft, the Houston Rockets select Reed Sheppard from the University of Kentucky.
We all thought that, based off of Las Vegas at least, there was a very good chance that the Houston Rockets would take Reed Sheppard, guard out of Kentucky, with that third overall pick. And after two French players went pick one, pick two, Donovan Clingan still on the board, the Rockets did what Vegas expected, not what all the smoke screens suggested they might. They passed on Clingan. They drafted Reed Sheppard, Joe, who they told us afterwards they believed to be the best player in this year's draft, which they've said four straight drafts, but they feel Sheppard, his shooting ability makes up for his lack of size. His playmaking ability makes up for his, I guess, lack of playing time at Kentucky.
Yeah, it's going to be fascinating to see with Sheppard, too, how quickly he becomes part of this team. Because that's the, it's like a, you know, us or me, math equations, trying to figure out how all these guys on this team get playing time. I wouldn't be shocked if he's a big G League guy this first year, too.
Oh, damn.
I mean, Cam Whitmore spent time in the G League. Where's he going to play? I mean, like, who is he going to play over? Everyone's trying to talk about the Rockets' secondary unit and having him in there, but I hope so.
It actually is a good question because of his size and because you also wonder, well, what will they specifically use him for? I think the fact that he can shoot, though, is going to get him on the roster and get him some playing time. How much? I don't know. Are they going to use him the same way that the Celtics love to use Peyton Pritchard when there's a couple of seconds left on the off chance that they can get a half-court heave? I mean, that might be his role his first
year. That's just profiling.
Why is it profiling?
A 6'1" guy.
That are
white
good
guy.
Shooters?
Is Peyton Pritchard a good shooter?
Peyton Pritchard's a really good shooter,
okay.
Yeah.
Is because they make it seem like all he can do is hit half-court shots because he doesn't play other than that.
But Peyton Pritchard at Oregon was a really good three-point shooter. So, okay. Yeah, this is essentially Reed Sheppard. I think that's what you're hoping for the first couple of years of Reed Sheppard as he develops and figures out the NBA level. Can he turn into what Peyton Pritchard currently is for the Boston Celtics?
And maybe a little bit more, you would hope.
More eventually, for sure.
Yeah, but you know, 16 minutes a game is what Aaron Holiday was playing right now. That probably is close to the peak of what Sheppard might be this first year for the Rockets, is playing 15, 16 minutes a game.
Yeah, you'd think Thompson would play. Could Thompson playing more? Because Thompson also was hurt for a lot of last year. Mm-hmm. So him just like some of Aaron Holiday's minutes are just inflated because there's games where he had to play 24 of them. 24 minutes. I think Reed Sheppard as, like eighth, ninth guy. The trade they made just a couple, or I guess an hour or so ago, trading for AJ Griffin. That's another guy who's more of a two or three, but is another spot in the rotation that's probably going to get taken up.
That's an interesting move because he was a top at one point, believed to be like a top five draft pick 2 years ago.
Yeah, he was AJ Griffin. A classic kind of Duke story. Where yeah. He's a super highly recruited guy. Is like all right at Duke, not crazy good, falls in the draft a little bit. He was picked one spot ahead of Tari Eason in 2022. So he has some injury problems. That's kind of why his stock is low, is that he hasn't been healthy for long stretches. And he was solid his rookie year, but then they fired their coach and brought in Quinn Snyder, and he just hasn't had that kind of production with Snyder running things for the Hawks. So I think it's a – I mean, they traded the 44th pick for this guy. I think it's a perfectly worthwhile dart throw of maybe this guy is a, you know, can do what Reggie Bullock did for you last year, where mm-hmm. he's kind of a spot player, plays back into the rotation, can shoot a little bit, plays some defense.
So you're all good with the Shepherd pick? I know we talked about it yesterday before. We're all
yeah.
I'm glad it played out the way it did.
Look, I'll be honest. And I'm 100% profiling here. I would have rather a Euro because it seems like Euros have a different drive. And I know that sounds almost racist or xenophobic against Americans, which is ironic given where I was earlier in the show with my redneck accent saying, but there is a part of me thinking, well, there's probably more upside with the guys who have played overseas. But with Rasarchet, who is, per some, not deserving of the number one overall pick, specifically what, Frank Mason?
Yeah, yeah.
And with Sarr, I really don't know what to expect. With Shepherd, I feel like I know what I'm getting.
I think that's the difference between, even though he didn't start at Kentucky, and that's why there's still a bunch of questions about of what he can and can't be, because he didn't, you know, take that, he didn't have that big role in college. But at this point, it's almost all irrelevant to me. Honestly, what you do before, I think you see those first three picks are two guys from France who have poor stats combined. What, Sean, you said 19 points per game?
Yeah, one of them averaged 10, one of them averaged 9.
And then you have Shepherd, who's drafted third overall, who didn't start in college. Dillinger didn't start. You know, Zach Edey played a lot in college, one of the best college basketball players. He goes top 10, but what has he developed? The college basketball is such a weird game now where there's such a lack of development. It's more about, this player is not – like, this pick is not going to be good because of what he did Kentucky. It's all about how you develop players. And if the Rockets have a good developmental system, they'll turn Reed Shepherd into something that's worthwhile. That's really the question. It's just, like, how much can they develop a player in a short amount of time?
And I definitely trust the current coaching staff and the current development program.
Post-Steven Silas.
Yes, mm-hmm. than the ones that some of the other Rockets picks have been drafted into.
Shepherd is a good shooter. Shepherd is also supposedly someone who has, even though he's smaller, very good vision. And, I mean, that's the other thing that we've seen completely lacking from the Rockets the last couple of years until Fred VanVleet came in, is somebody who knows how to run the offense. And in the past, it was, what, Kevin Porter Jr. and Jalen Green just mm-hmm. doing whatever they wanted. And last
Deshaun
year,
Deshaun Knicks mixed
in. Yeah, exactly. Deshaun Knicks is the worst thing ever. So now, you assume, as some have pointed out, he goes in for Aaron Holiday, and that he gets 10, 15 minutes a game, and he actually thrives in that spot. But the good thing is he's not in a high pressure situation. There's a lot of other young players on this team, and I'm not looking at Reed Shepherd as someone who ever develops into a star. I'm hoping best case scenario, JJ Redick.
That's why the Rockets were in such a privileged position to be drafting third in this draft specifically, where they're not like a team like the Washington Wizards, or even to a certain extent what the Spurs were looking at the fourth pick, or what the Pistons are at the fifth pick, where they kind of need to add another young, like, well, this is a shot at a superstar. We should,
right.
And where the Rockets were, it's like, yeah, he could shoot. I don't know, play a little bit of point guard after next year when VanVleet leaves, maybe. So that what they're looking for is different at this third pick is different what they're looking for when they pick Jabari Smith third overall. When they actually really needed Jabari Smith to be a difference maker. I think he's been solid so far, but You know, I can't imagine what we would be thinking if we're coming off of one of the 20-62 Rocket seasons and you're like, great, Reed Sheppard.
Even if this was last year and he was the guy instead of Amen Thompson, I think we'd be feeling differently. I mean, because Amen Thompson had a good amount of hype around him.
Yeah, but his G League. I remember thinking when they made that pick.
It was overtime elite, actually.
I have no idea. Yeah, worse.
It's even worse.
Not even,
my bad.
Barely real.
So I had no idea what to expect with him. And I think the fact that you were coming from the Silas era, I really was nervous about the direction of the franchise. Like I was thinking to myself, like, why is Rafael Stone still here? You know? And now I'm in a spot where after this past season, I feel a lot more comfortable about any young player where I feel like they're going to be coached hard. And on top of that, I also don't think they're going to be forced into a role where like they have to do things right away. Like, you're not looking at Reed Sheppard as a reason to sell tickets or anything like that. Now, I know the Rockets have been dying for somebody like that for the last four seasons in all four of these drafts, and they have yet to find that guy. But I think that's the nice part about this is there's really no pressure on Sheppard when he comes in. And I think that's going to help him a lot, considering he's undersized and isn't exactly what you're looking for from that perspective as a point guard.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, now we have him, Amen Thompson, like what that backcourt looks like, how it works together. They have a lot of options. Like, that's what the Rockets have done with the Sheppard pick and the picks in the past, the Rafael Stone, where he gets credit in his draft, is you've got all these guys who do everything a little bit different. Really, the only two players who are similar, I would say, are Jalen Green and Cam Whitmore. And you just need two of them to hit.
Yep.
That's all you need. If two of these guys hit, you are a championship-level team. And you've got seven options where you need two of them to be one, a top 10-ish guy, and one, a top 10 to 25. If you get that out of this group, you can win a championship. And you just got to figure out who it's going to be at this point. But I like the pick. I'm glad they took Sheppard. To me, taking Klingon, a big man, is just a waste in the modern NBA. So I'm just glad they didn't do that.
Something you said there, I want to talk about on the other side specifically, like what do these guys need to develop into? Who you have on the Houston Rockets? It's Gallon and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Stick around. First, let me tell you about my friends at Pendleton Whiskey. Pendleton Whiskey. Guys, it's so damn good. I might have a little bit when I get home to make sure that I'm calm, that I'm relaxed before my first pitch tonight. Down in S-Land, as the kids say. Pendleton Whiskey is so good. You know why? Why? Because of what it's made with. The finest ingredients. The finest northern grains from the beautiful Great Plains of the Northwest of the United States. It's cut with glacier water from Oregon's Mount Hood. Doesn't that sound refreshing right now? Oh, boy. And on top of that, it's barrel-aged in American oak. You blend it all together, you get something that's going to satisfy your inner cowboy. Oh, my Lanta. Pendleton Whiskey. One big old rock, two fingers worth of that goodness. That's going into my system before that first pitch. Because I want to be calm, cool, relaxed, and happy before I blow everyone's socks off. Guys, Pendleton Whiskey will satisfy your inner cowboy. It's true Western tradition. Get it at Pendleton Whiskey's website. Find out how to make cocktails with Pendleton Whiskey at Pendleton Whiskey's website or get it at your local liquor store today. Pendleton Whiskey, it's true Western tradition. Welcome back to the Tucker Paulson Show. 80 years ago, the United States of America invaded France to free the French from Nazi Germany. And how are the French repaying this service that we offered them for free? Oh, wait. With the lives of many American patriots? They're invading the National Basketball Association. Not one, not two, not three, but four French players were drafted in the first round of the United States of America's National Basketball Association. This invasion doesn't just show a weakness by Americans under President Joe Biden not being the best they can possibly be. It also shows a blatant disregard for the American way of life by all of these foreigners who we haven't built a wall to keep out. What is happening? What is going on? Well, I'll tell you something good that's going on here in Houston. The Rockets didn't look overseas to find talent.
They found some good old-fashioned talent, hardworking, scrappy, with a work ethic that's unlike any other, deceptively fast player, who knows that it's not about the dunks and knows that it's not about being flashy, wearing cool suits. They found a man in Reed Shepherd who is the embodiment of the American dream. Jimmer Fredette 2.0, we can only hope.
I don't hope that. Jimmer?
What's wrong with Jimmer Fredette?
You're right. You're right.
This is an American hero. He's fighting for our country overseas in France.
I forgot. I forgot that Jimmer is an American hero.
He's gonna get payback for the first and second pick in the draft.
He's gonna get a gold medal. You think Wemby's playing on their 3-on-3 team?
No, he's playing on the actual team.
Can he play on both? I'd love to see Victor Wembanyama.
I also think that. I'm like, why don't they just, like, why are we sending Jimmer Fredette for the 3-on-3 league when we have an entire NBA of other guys that we can send?
And one of the Barry kids that we found out apparently plays basketball.
Canyon Barry?
Yes, Canyon Barry. Yep.
His first name is Canyon?
Yes.
Like C-A-N-Y-O-N?
Or maybe it's Cannon? I forgot.
I think it's Canyon.
I would rather be named Cannon than Canyon.
I don't think he shoots underhand like Pops or whoever connected he is to the Barry family. Mm. Will you throw the first pitch underhand tonight? And then we can get back to the Rockets. You softball it, just
yeah, you had to grunt too.
If I threw it like a softball, I have no idea where it would end up. I have no idea how the strong, independent women of America are able to make that ball go in a straight line underhand.
Rising fastball.
Whoop. Do softball players have to get Tommy John surgery ever?
Mm. No, I don't think so.
So you're saying we should change baseball?
I think
softball?
They can throw like a million like pitches too.
Yeah, I mean, because
it's not like the worst way to throw a baseball for like our body is the way that we throw a baseball.
Mm-hmm. Especially when putting the torque on it and everything that a curveball entails. Joe, you said something in the last segment that intrigued me, in that you're hoping that one of these Rockets players develops into a top 10 player.
I think if you want to be a championship team in the NBA, you have to have a top 10 player.
Is it realistic though to get the top 10 player? Because I would like that. We all would like that, obviously. But I look at what the Boston Celtics just did, and I mean, are Jason Tatum or Jaylen Brown top 10 players?
I think you argue Jason Tatum's probably top 5.
I don't think Tatum's top 5. I definitely don't think he's top 5.
Yeah, I would say a lot of people view him that way, at worst top 10.
I'll be honest, like I love his game. But I trust Jaylen Brown more than I trust Jason Tatum. And I think a lot of people would put Jaylen Brown probably around 15, 16, 17 or something like that. And I think Tatum's a lot closer to that than we're willing to admit. So I don't think you necessarily need to have that top 10 guy. I think you need to have a couple of really good players. And you hope that they all develop together and have good chemistry with each other. This took 9 years to happen for Boston. And I don't know if Tillman Fertitta is going to be that patient with Ime Udoka or with Rafael Stone or whoever else maybe comes in along the way. But I don't know that you need definitively to have that top 10 guy, because the top 10 guys, it's like striking the lottery if you get one. But do you feel like the Mavericks are going to be back with Luka Doncic?
That's a tough one.
Do you feel that the Nuggets are going to be back? Sure, because they have Jokic and they have Jamal Murray. But after that, the top players there, Giannis with Damian Lillard, I don't know. I feel like, we talk about the stars, and I think we've been conditioned to look at basketball teams because of what the Miami Heat did, what the Boston Celtics did 2008 and 2011, to say, hey, you need to have as many stars as possible and just fill out the roster afterwards. Now, I feel like every single team has someone that, maybe not the Rockets, is approaching top 30 in the league. And I don't think any of them necessarily needs to be top 10. I think depth and having the most depth possible is what you should be striving for more than getting that one guy who's a essentially divine figure basketball-wise. Because they're so hard to find, and you're probably not going
to
find them.
To be honest, I think it would be harder to rebuild the Celtics model than to just have the traditional model of having a top 10 player on your team and being a championship contender because of that person in a lot of moments. Boston is so, so deep. They're so talented, what they have from top to bottom. It's going to be really challenging to replicate that. But if you go back, I mean, I'll just use my lifetime as an example. The team with the least amount of star power to win a championship in my lifetime is only the Pistons, probably in 2004. Yeah. Every team has Kobe, Shaq, Steph, LeBron, Duncan. It is just Hakeem. Don't want to disrespect him, of course. Like KG, Paul Pierce. It's just the reality that you always have a top 10 guy in the NBA on your team when you win a championship. Because I do put Jason Tatum in that category personally. And you have,
okay.
And really, you need two guys in at least the top 20 to be a championship team. And that's what they have with Brown and Tatum.
You mentioned 08 with Kevin Garnett and Pierce. I don't think Pierce was top 10. I think Pierce was close. I think Garnett probably had a case to
Garnett,
be top 10.
Garnett was the better player.
Yeah.
Yeah. Ray Allen was still...
Allen was a different version of Ray Allen.
Yeah.
Because the Ray Allen that we saw with Milwaukee was someone who could dunk and was awesome. And he became a spot-up shooter over the course of his career. And really good at it.
And that Celtics team is kind of more similar to this Celtics team. Where
exactly. That's what I mean.
You had Rondo and all these guys.
So maybe this is my own bias because of what I've grown up rooting for. But I and this ownership group that they have. I mean, I think there's a strong case to be made that they're the best ownership group in the NBA because of their patience and the lack of turnover that we have seen over the years. Obviously, success is a reason for it, but that's, I think, more the model that we should be looking at the Rockets trying to copy. And it is such a dramatic difference from what Daryl Morey did. And Morey deserves credit. I mean, they went from being a middle-of-the-road team with no assets and no players of consequence in 2011 to a couple of years later having James Harden and then getting Dwight Howard and then eventually Chris Paul and some of these other guys. And then eventually it kind of fell off the road. But,
you know, Paul, I think I might have done like, I don't want the Rockets to trade for a top 5 to 10 guy.
You just hope that you get
like if one of these guys doesn't develop into it, at bare minimum, Jason Tatum, they're not going to win a championship.
That's what I wanted to focus on. Not about trading for one, more so, hey, do you have to have a top 10 guy to win a title?
I think you do. Yeah. You need at least a top 15 guy. Because like what you talk
top
about,
top 15, Jaylen, that's fair.
Jaylen Brown, like he is, you know, he without those clutch moments, without that guy that can, in the biggest moment, get the bucket, can make the stop, you got no shot. And really, you need two of them because look at the Mavericks. They only had one.
I'm not even sure. I mean, it depends how good your first guy is because we're focusing so much on the Mavericks and the Celtics because they played for the finals 2 weeks ago. But, I mean, like the Denver Nuggets, they just have the best player in basketball and no other all-stars.
But I would say a lot of people do view Jamal Murray very fondly.
He just never made an all-star.
Yeah.
He hasn't made an all-star team is what I'm saying. So, he's not better than Jaylen Brown. He's not better than Jason Tatum.
For sure.
He's not better than the whichever you think of those two guys is the worst player. He's not as good as
them.
But
they have the number one player in the NBA. Yes. So it balances out.
And then the year before, you have Steph Curry winning.
Mm-hmm.
There's no one else on that team, or on, like specifically that year, that was an all-star level player. Draymond was... in the finals. He had just as many games that he probably cost them than he actually won them. Classic Draymond Green. You had prime Andrew Wiggins, which was like a fine 3-and-D role player. You had Klay Thompson, who wasn't the Klay Thompson that we remember from the original Dynasty run. The difference is they had Steph Curry, who just can carry you to a championship at a certain point. So I think you still just want, I mean, even the year before, you have Giannis. Like, it's just the way to win it is the hardest way, but it is to just have a superhuman on your team.
And the Rockets would be more likely to fit into what the Celtics model is of having an extremely deep roster that being able to eventually use some of these pieces to move on from those players to get a guy like Drew Holiday. I mean, you look at what the Celtics did. Like, they made so many shrewd moves to get to where they are today. They tried the Kyrie thing, but they didn't give up any of their top prospects
yeah.
to get Kyrie Irving. Then they bailed on him. Then they got Brogdon. They turned Brogdon into Jrue Holiday. Like, they have just made Brad Stevens, since he took over for Danny Ainge, who was arguably the best mind in basketball, Brad Stevens stepped in and just made shrewd move after shrewd move to go get Holiday and Porzingis this offseason, to get Derek White the year before. They gave up an unprotected 2029 first-round pick for Derek White, I believe it is, and people probably clowned that move at the time. He's one of the most important role players you have yeah. on the Boston Celtics.
And I think maybe just as we're talking this out, maybe the most important part is the homegrown nature of whoever your best player is, and whether he's a top one guy or a top 10 guy. I mean, all the guys we talked about were guys, no one traded for Steph Curry. No one traded for Jokic. No one traded for Tatum and Brown as players. No one traded for
Giannis.
No, I mean, it's really the outlier is the Lakers one in 2020 and the Raptors in 2019.
Even then, they were built the entire
yeah,
team.
They just
except
swapped
for DeMar.
They literally just did swap out DeMar DeRozan and yeah. get Kawhi Leonard. So there is a level of these trades for, I mean, or just signing Kawhi Leonard and then trading for Paul George and all these moves that we talk about. A lot of times, those aren't the teams that are holding up the trophy. I guess literally, unless you have LeBron James, LeBron is the only difference,
or Steph Curry, and then you add Kevin Durant to it.
Yeah.
But you're
even
right.
That's entirely they kind of did the Kawhi thing where they just swapped out Harrison Barnes for Kevin Durant.
What a deal that was.
From the 8-3-2 Rockets, Celtics West. I think it would be Celtics
South West.
Yeah.
Ish.
But I'm just thinking of we're Patriots South. Now we're Celtics.
We're the Gulf Coast Celtics. How about that?
I mean, you have to take players to be someone.
All right. Give me Jalen Brown.
Where did Jeff
Paul,
Green?
Give me Jalen Brown right now.
I'm sure Jeff Green and Aaron Holiday.
Jalen Green for Jalen Brown. Just a different color of Jalen.
I mean, now that the Celtics have a title, I mean, look, I want the Celtics to keep this up and repeat next year. But at the same time, if Jalen Brown were to come to the Houston Rockets, I would be very happy.
Remember last year when people thought it was going
to
happen? Yeah. Granata reported the.
I wanted it to happen. I was like, let's tamper the F out of him.
Yeah.
Now you got to tamper Giannis. And yeah, listen, I'm telling you, like, because he would be top 10, I still think. Top 5?
He's, yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Paul, I would like for you just to list out the top players in the league. And
there's a vibe thing with Jason Tatum. I'm sorry. I can't.
Do you think he's better
there
than Joel Embiid?
Yeah, no.
So you think the Celtics would be better with Joel Embiid on their team?
No, I don't think that.
Okay, then.
but there's a difference between being the best player and being the best fit, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
That's sort of where I'm going here.
I guess. I don't know.
All right, Devin Booker to me is like long term, you're going to make a big move. It's Booker. It's Giannis. We'll see how Embiid does health wise. I guess a little bit of Giannis too. Those are the three that I'm keeping my eye on right now. If you're going to make a big swing at some point.
Saying if we're ranking this like quarterbacks, I think the fact that Joel Embiid has never played in a conference finals, I feel like that has to keep him out of the top five.
That's fair, but at the same okay, I'm just going to give a couple of names really quickly. We can go to break if you want to react to it. Okay, if I had to pick Jason Tatum or this guy, Tatum or Joel Embiid, probably taking Joel Embiid. Oof. Jason Tatum or Jalen Brunson, I don't know. I don't know on that one.
Really?
Jason Tatum or Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I don't know on that one. Jason Tatum or Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum or Luka Doncic, Luka. Jason Tatum or Nikola Jokic, Nikola Jokic. For this year, Jason Tatum or LeBron James, I still feel like with LeBron, it's LeBron. Jason Tatum or Anthony Edwards, Anthony Edwards. Jason Tatum or Devin Booker, that one's tricky. I probably shouldn't say Devin Booker. I would probably say Devin Booker.
I feel like you're falling too much into the vibes.
Yeah, 100%. Sean, are you new to this show? Are you new to this show? Are you new to this show? Come on. Galan and George, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. 713-780-3776 to call in to text in. Joe George is to my right. Sean Mapes is behind the glass. We wrap things up with garbage time next. And what do I do for this first pitch tonight? What do I do? Throw as hard as possible? Do a split like I'm Simone Biles? Show my donk like I'm Megan Thee Stallion? What do I do? It's Galan and George. Stick around.
are listening to Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Throwing out a first pitch tonight for the Sugarland Space Cowboys.
Yeah, you are.
ESPN 97.5 listener light. Night. Jeez. Listener night. Down in Sugarland, I'm wearing a Screwston Astros t-shirt.
Is that what you're going to wear tonight?
Yes.
Okay.
I have very short shorts on. Got it. I've got...
represent the brand.
Some My Cause, My Kicks shoes that I got from the Houston Texans that also happen to be purple for the Sickle Cell Association of Texas. So, I mean, I look pretty good, but am I going to throw it good?
You know what Deion says.
Look good, play good.
Look good, feel good. Feel good, play good.
Gotcha. I forgot to feel good. I really want to know what I'm supposed to do with the first pitch because I want to throw it as hard as I can. I really do. I want to compete. I always compete.
I would just say, what are you most nervous about?
I'm not nervous about making it to home plate. I'm not nervous about getting it in the catcher's mitt. I'm not nervous about accuracy. I am nervous about, am I supposed to throw it full speed or am I supposed to, or am I supposed to just lob it in? I don't know what the decorum is.
If you think that you can get it there to the mitt with gas, I think you throw with gas.
Throwing off of the mound is also something that I'm not sure I feel great about.
I'm assuming
they're not going to have us on the mound because I would think that they don't want us to step on the mound and ruin it.
They threw on the mound last year.
Okay.
They did, yeah.
Okay.
I think they threw it off the mound, but I do think you have a choice.
See, so that's
That's the problem. If you go first and you don't throw off the mound, and then Branham throws off the mound after you, no matter what happens on your first pitch, you're going to be called a soft boy for not going off the mound.
True.
Yeah, so, you have to go off the rubber.
I think you either have to go second after Jeremy, or you have to just go off the rubber.
I'm going to go second.
What if they tell you you're going first? Because he's
going to choose to defer.
It's up to the PA announcer.
I'm going to choose to defer.
It's going to be up to the PA announcer.
His last name alphabetically is before mine, so.
That's a good sign for you.
But chronologically on the show or beforehand.
A lot of people think I'm going to get hurt tonight.
I hope that's
Catechism himself. When you get hurt tonight, are you going to be like the Astros and not tell us how bad it really is? Yeah,
yes,
that'd be funny.
That's 100% good.
Tricep discomfort. Battery chucker, tell us what Tommy John surgery feels like. Well, I mean,
I am kind of expecting you to show up to work tomorrow in a sling, whether it's real or for a bit. Neck brace.
I don't know if I can do that.
I don't know how fast you can get a sling, too.
I don't know. I feel like Paul's got, you know, a little injury history here.
No.
Play a lot of flag football.
Yeah, I broke both my wrists and a finger playing flag football.
I'm like, you've got it.
He's the Cal Ripken of flag football.
Kept playing. That's true. Played injured. Played hurt. All right,
the Ronnie Lott of flag football.
Yeah, that's true. He regretted cutting his pinky off. People don't talk about that.
Yeah, I understand why.
Yeah, I also would.
A little garbage time, which we are already in the midst of. Did you see that Kelly Stafford has apologized for the story that she told about hooking up with Matt Stafford's backup to make Matt Stafford commit?
Yeah, I'm not surprised she apologized. I still just don't understand why she told the story in general.
She posted on her Instagram story a picture of Georgia Bulldogs backup quarterback Joe Cox and his wife and their three kids with this caption: "To this beautiful fam, I'm sorry for the media storm that happened last week that made its way into your lives. You had zero involvement in what I spoke about, and in fact, it was y'all's relationship in college that I looked up to and wanted for me and Matthew." Okay.
So
you were the couple that everyone thinks Matthew and I was. Y'all were the UGA quarterback and cheerleader that met and never let go. I love y'all.
So
it wasn't Joe Cox.
So it wasn't Joe Cox.
No, it was one of the other backup quarterbacks.
I thought she was at first when you started telling the story, Paul, I thought she was admitting that it was Joe. And then she was apologizing at the same time. That would have been even funnier.
Well, she created this herself. She should have just said who it was. Like, dude, the backup quarterback is going to lead to reckless speculation.
And Joe Cox was, like, the second string guy. Of course, that's who everyone thinks. But backup quarterback, like, in college football, there's five backup quarterbacks.
But on Pro Football Focus and all these websites, he's the only quarterback listed on the roster besides Matt Stafford.
Probably because he's the only guy who collected a stat that year.
Yeah. But so no one really knows.
No one knows.
I think that makes it worse.
I think we know. I don't know.
Oh, you think
you
it's
made
Joe Cox.
It sound like you knew?
There's Georgia Bulldog reporters that were like, "It's not Joe Cox," but I can't say who it was.
Why can't you say who it is?
Out of respect for the families involved.
Garbage. Leak it to us.
I can't
we'll
imagine
tell them.
Joe Cox's wife being like, "What the hell is this? What's happening?"
Listen,
well, tell Kelly to shut up then.
I'm sure she did. I'm sure that's what led to this Instagram post.
She didn't shut up before she said it on a podcast.
Well, that's the content.
But always be podcasting.
ABP.
JJ Redick's going to miss it. And that's going to wrap up today's edition of
funny
the Galant and George Show.
Funny text here. This text here says, "This is going to determine how I feel about Paul's glory days of high school football." So your reputation is on the line. All the stories you've told. If you airmail this
if
first pitch
if I do
pitch
something
tonight,
in baseball?
Apparently. At least according to this texter.
Michael Jordan sucked at baseball. No pressure, Paul.
Yeah, Tim Tebow sucked at baseball. No pressure.
I don't know.
No one thinks less of Michael Jordan because of the Birmingham Barons.
Are you sure?
I do, but that's because I only watch Space Jam.
We'll see how it
goes.
We'll
be rooting for you tonight.
We'll see how it goes. And on that note, big thanks to Sean Mapes, to Joe George, and to everybody who listened to today's edition of Galant and George. Coming up next is the Killer Bees. I am merely Paul Galant. So long, farewell, and have yourselves a wonderful Thursday. Peace!
Maybe we should get some swangas?